Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Tom Bird. I represent the appellants, the Amperons. I'd like to reserve 4 minutes of my time for rebuttal. The Amperons' appeal turns on the question of materiality. The District Court identified two disputed issues of fact. One, whether Lake Powell violated the 25-year minimum age requirement for car rentals, and secondly, whether Lake Powell conferred implied permission onto Mr. DeMere to drive the rented cars, but concluded that neither of those issues were material under the controlling law. The District Court decided that neither of these fact issues was material because the Amperons, in the District Court's view, could not demonstrate that entrusting the car to Mr. DeMere posed an unreasonable risk of injury to others.
Well, let me ask you about that. You're importing under Grassi these general principles of negligence law to negligent entrustment. And in the the Uniform Jury Instruction, I think it's element 3, is more than the creation of an unreasonable risk of injury. I'm having trouble finding it, but it's essentially that it has to be likely that the entrustee is an incompetent to, in this context, to operate a motor vehicle. So, at least under the Uniform Jury Instruction, there has to be more from Lake Powell than an unreasonable risk of injury. It has to be a likelihood that any of these gentlemen were an incompetent driver. And that seems to be a disconnect between the application of these general negligence principles under Grassi to a negligent entrustment theory.
A couple thoughts in response to your question, Your Honor. First of all, New Mexico law recognizes in the McCarson case that general principles of negligence are relevant in the analysis of negligent entrustment. The second point is that even assuming that the higher standard or arguably higher standard specified in the jury instruction is the controlling law here, we have evidence in this case that the 25-year minimum age requirement reflects the determination by Lake Powell's franchisor, Avis, that renting cars to drivers younger than that age should be prohibited because of the higher incidence of accidents and injuries associated with that demographic.
So if we were to assume that anyone under 25 is incompetent to operate a motor vehicle, doesn't that fly in the face of the driving age in most states that you get your learner's permit when you're 15 and your driver's permit when you're 16?
No, Your Honor, and I think that's the reasoning that Judge Johnson followed. He identified the 15-and-a-half-year age limit in New Mexico provisional license as evidence that weighed against the adoption of using the minimum age requirement as a relevant standard. And I think that thinking misunderstands the majority rule. The majority rule is that a defendant's internal policies, procedures, requirements can be probative of negligence, but it's not decisive, it's not determinative. There's no such thing as a negligence per se claim based on a defendant's violation of its own rules. So I think that Judge Johnson overread the Grassi position and the majority law in thinking that if he were to agree to us that this evidence creates an issue of fact, that he would in effect be endorsing a per se determination that drivers under the age of 25 were incompetent. So I think that his reasoning misunderstands the extent, the limits on the majority rule. And I think that's spelled out in almost every case that adopts the majority rule in the three quarters of jurisdictions that follow it. This is not like a statute or an ordinance which, if violated, establishes per se liability.
Many of these states take the position that if you have a valid driver's license, that it's fair for the trustor to assume that you are competent to drive.
Yes, Your Honor, and I think you're talking about the Drummond case, the Scott case, that line of cases, and all of them say without more. And I think that we presented Judge Johnson with more. We presented him with testimony from Avis's 30B6 designee, that this age limit is an industry standard. We presented the statistical basis for the rule, also acknowledged by Mr. Honig and by the Omicron's expert. So I think that...
Well, let me ask you about that, and I apologize for interrupting you, but as far as the factual underpinnings for your theory, assuming that we accept the legal underpinnings of your theory, I question whether or not what you just said is actually correct. Because I read the 30B6 transcript of the Avis representative, and I read Mr. Tennant's report. And on the 30B6 deposition transcript of the Avis representative, I did not read that to indicate anywhere that there was a policy that no franchisee could or should rent to a vehicle to someone under age 25. And in fact, I think on pages 23 and 24, the Avis representative specifically said that there is a legal requirement. I think he was referring to a decision in New York state courts that had specifically required rental car companies to because it was a theory of age discrimination, to rent drivers that were, even though they were under 25. So I didn't see anything in the Avis representative, but sorry for such a compound question. But, okay, assuming you get by that, tell me where in Mr. Tennant's report he ever says that the industry standard is not to rent to anybody under age 25.
What he says, Your Honor, is that many car rental agencies have minimum age standards. Many of them require the driver to be 25. Many of them have younger limits or lower limits, but they usually impose a surcharge or limit the kinds of vehicles that can be rented to drivers in that.
So would you concede, and I'm not trying to, this isn't a deposition, but saying that there's a lot of companies that do something also leaves the obvious question, are there a lot of companies like Lake Powell that do rent to people under age 25? So are you acknowledging that Mr. Tennant never says that it's an industry standard not to rent drivers under
25? Yes, he never says that. He never uses those words. Mr. Honig, however, did use those words. He was talking about, and he also said that those requirements, the ones imposed on Lake Powell through the exclusive licensing agreement and the operator's manual that's incorporated into that license agreement, that those are what Avis would expect from its operators. So I think we have a record that, and in addition to that, Lake Powell's own website tells the public that it doesn't rent cars to drivers under 25. So I think we have a record that is more than the record that was presented.
Well, I think what you just argued is that we have a grassy situation.
If
you're right about the Avis deposition, you're saying that just like in Grassy, we have an internal policy. We don't have anything more than that. We don't have any expert testimony that this is an industry standard. And in Grassy, the plaintiff lost. So it seems to me that you're arguing that you're similarly situated to the plaintiff in Grassy, but that's not a winning position.
Well, got to remember, Your Honor, Grassy was a hospital negligence case. The Court of Appeals held that without an expert, you can't demonstrate to a lay jury the standard of care that's applicable to the operation of a hospital. That's not something the average person would be conversant in. So New Mexico law would require an expert witness. In this case, I don't think we actually needed an expert witness, and that's a difference between our situation and Grassy. So I think I want to emphasize, however, that all of this points to the existence of a fact issue, that we've presented evidence that under the law of New Mexico, which the Erie Doctrine makes the yardstick for materiality because it's the controlling substantive law, we presented evidence that a reasonable jury could rely on in concluding that the entrustment of the car to these young Turks, literally, was improper, was negligent.
But you're looking at negligence generally when we're sitting in diversity and New Mexico has a different standard for negligent entrustment that has this third element that the defendant knew or should have known that the third party was likely to use the vehicle in such a manner as to create an unreasonable risk of harm to others. Isn't that the standard we're required under Erie to apply to this case.
Yes, Your Honor, and I think that the evidence that we put on that shows the jury that Avis thinks that this demographic is sufficiently unreliable, unsafe, that it's going to prohibit rentals to them would satisfy that standard. That would allow a reasonable jury to conclude, well, if they don't think that these drivers are safe enough to allow them to rent these cars, that means they understand that they're likely to be incompetent. So we're not going to deal with them.
What if their policy is because they're a bad credit risk and they don't pay for the cars that they rent them?
Mr. Honig testified that the minimum age requirement reflected statistics having to do with accidents and injuries, not credit risk. Another sort of complicating factor here is that in most states, a driver under 18, it probably varies from state to state, is not competent for contract purposes. And then there's also the question of whether the driver has a credit card, and all those things can depend on age. But in this instance, we had Mr. Honig telling us that this minimum age requirement reflects the perception that drivers in that demographic pose a greater risk, and therefore these companies have concluded that they're not going to deal with those drivers.
But greater risk isn't really incompetent, which the case law seems to require.
That, I believe, Your Honor, is a fact issue. I think we could tell the jury that rule means that Avis thinks that they're incompetent and they're not going to deal with them.
Is there anything in Mr. Honig's deposition that says that?
He says, I think I've maybe gone as far as the testimony permits me to go. Of course, we're entitled to reasonable inferences in our favor, and my argument is probably based on those. I'd like to use the balance of my time for rebuttal, Your Honors.
You bet. Thank you. Mr. Gentile?
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Robert Gentile, and I represent Lake Powell in this matter.
I'm sorry for mispronouncing your name.
That's all right. You're not the first, Your Honor. I may mispronounce yours.
That'd be fair.
This case sometimes reminds me that I'm looking at my first year of law school. The issue with the plaintiff's case is they are attempting to treat negligence and negligent entrustment as one and the same. And they're not. They're two completely distinct concepts. I understand that elements of negligence are relevant to a negligent entrustment analysis. But that's true with all torts. Elements of negligence would be relevant to an analysis of any tort. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they're one and the same, and that if you prove negligence, you've proved negligent entrustment. And that's not what is being argued in this case. In this case, the plaintiffs have to show that the trustee, the individual that is being handed the keys in this case, that person is an incompetent driver, that person is likely to use the car in a dangerous manner. Not a group of people, not a demographic of people, but this particular individual. And courts in New Mexico have given us guidance on what provides this person to be an incompetent driver. They, are intoxicated. They're impaired mentally or physically. Driving citations, accidents, they're on medication. These are all in the cases that we've cited to show that this person is an incompetent driver.
What about if you know they're going to drive 14 hours in a single day and they only have two drivers for two cars?
I believe that those are questions that you can ask them when you're renting the car. But I don't know that there's necessarily any sort of statute that prohibits them from driving that far. Anybody with a license has the same, responsibilities or the same right to, kind of drive however, or however far they would like to drive that they feel comfortable driving.
And there's no limit. So if I agree to return the car the next day and my plan is to do a drive that normally would take 36 hours in 24, no, you don't have any reasonable expectation that I'm likely to be a risk of harm to others?
I believe that that's something that should probably be considered. But I also think when you're renting somebody a car, you're lending somebody your car, you're doing it to a licensed driver. You're allowed to assume that that person who's licensed is going to follow the rules of the road. They're going to be a responsible driver. I don't think we have to assume the opposite of that. And there's nothing in our case law that says, you know, that's the assumption, that you have to assume people are going to do something bad, and you're going to have to assume they're going to do something negative with the car, and then you act accordingly to try to figure it out. I think that
they're a licensed driver, but they reek of alcohol when they come to rent the car.
That is a much different situation.
Okay,
Your Honor.
So there are instances where a licensed driver, you could make out this third element.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if the person's on medication, you know they're on medication. You know that they've been arrested for drug charges. The standard for Lake Powell is the same as it would be for anybody in New Mexico. That if you lend a friend your car and you know that that person has a history of drug use and he has been recently drinking, that would subject you to liability under that third element because you know that person. And that's the distinction I think we're making in this case. And I think that's the distinction that Judge Johnson made that's important, is that it's an individual analysis. I didn't have anything further that I wanted to touch on. I believe the court touched on it when they had asked some questions, unless somebody has anything specific.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll hear from Mr. Byrd.
Thank you, Your Honors. The point Mr. Gentile made about the standard for Lake Powell being the same as it is for anybody else in New Mexico overlooks the circumstances. Lake Powell is in the business of making rental cars transactions with the public. Lake Powell is in possession of information about the risks associated with rentals to particular demographics. That's why the circumstances being considered by a fact finder deciding whether this conduct was culpable should include a consideration of the rules Lake Powell itself was obligated to follow, that Lake Powell itself violated. So I think Mr. Gentile, in saying that the standard's the same for Lake Powell as it is for anybody else in New Mexico, overlooks the absence of any law in New Mexico dealing with someone like Lake Powell who has a rule like the one Lake Powell is obligated to follow. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much. This matter will be submitted. Appreciate the excellent advocacy of both sides in your briefs and in argument today.